would I do?
Hi, welcome to Can't Make This Shit Up, a true crime podcast. I'm Cassie, a true crime enthusiast.
And I'm Mark, her dad, a true crime professional, currently a law enforcement officer in South Florida.
And we hope you guys enjoy. I have to admit to you guys that I lied last week. I said that this week we were going to have a special guest and we're going to do a case that my husband knew a lot about, but he had a work emergency, so he couldn't record with us this week. So we're going to push that off till next week. But this week we have a whole other case, which I think you guys will find pretty interesting. I have a few announcements before we begin. If you guys remember us talking about the raccoons from our Highway of Tears episode,
yeah,
I said that my friend was probably going to tell me I'm an idiot and that there are raccoons in Las Vegas. Well, it turns out that my best friend, who has grown up her whole life in Las Vegas, she told me that indeed I am an idiot and there are raccoons there. But in my defense, they are very rare.
All right.
So the whole time I was living there, I never saw one.
Okay. All right.
Also, if you remember in our last episode, we talked about how the jury was told after the case that they won't be required to be on a jury again for 30 years.
Right.
One of our listeners reached out last week.
The case from Ireland, right?
Yeah. So she's, this listener is an Irish listener. I won't say her name because I don't know if she wants me to call her out like that.
Okay.
She reached out on Instagram. So she told me that it actually is common in Ireland that jurors get like a break from being on a jury, that it's based on the severity of the case and kind of what they have to see. And the judge basically makes a determination of how long they don't have to serve for.
Wow. Okay. That's so smart. I mean, that makes sense.
So the case we're going to be covering this week was actually solved once again by your own Miami-Dade Police Department.
Bum, bum, bum.
So I'm interested to see if as we talk about it, you'll know it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm going to say this at the beginning. There's a whole confession that happens. And I watched the actual footage of the interrogation. I tried so hard to find the name of the detective.
Okay.
Because he's really great in the interrogation, but okay, I could not find his name anywhere. Okay. So maybe you can go back and figure out who it was.
Okay.
Because I would like to give him a shout out because he's really like an awesome interrogator.
Oh, okay. All right. Interesting.
So on the morning of February 3rd, 2004, at Southwood Middle School in Miami-Dade, a student walked into the boys' bathroom to use the restroom. As he walked in, he saw one of his classmates, 14-year-old gifted student Michael Hernandez, washing his hands. So is this ringing any bells yet?
Yep.
As the student made his way towards one of the stalls and walked further into the bathroom, he looked into one of the mirrors and saw the handicap stall in the reflection of the mirror. To his horror, he saw a boy sitting on top of the toilet, seemingly unconscious, with a pool of blood around him. The student began panicking and immediately asked Michael if he'd seen the other boy there. Michael calmly replied, "Yes, you should tell somebody," and walked out of the bathroom. The student immediately ran for help, and Michael calmly returned to class and didn't inform anyone. Once school officials entered the bathroom, it was apparent that the student in the stall, 14-year-old Jamie Goff, was unfortunately deceased. School officials immediately placed the school on lockdown and called the police. Upon investigating, police determined that Jamie's throat had been cut and he'd also been stabbed in the neck and face. An autopsy would later reveal that he had been stabbed over 40 times.
This was a big case all over the news. And I do remember, I didn't work it at all, but I do remember it. So,
you know, what's weird is I had never heard of this. And you would think that I would have heard of it, like, you know, because I'm actually the same age as the people involved in this case. So this case went on when I was like 14 or 15.
Right.
And I'm surprised I never heard anything about it, especially living down there.
Yeah, it was all over the news. It was a big deal at the time. So
it was quickly determined that Michael Hernandez, who had actually been one of Jamie's best friends. So Jamie's the one that they found deceased. Michael's the one who was washing his hands in the bathroom. It was determined that obviously Michael was one of the last ones in the bathroom with him. And when he returned to class, a teacher noticed bloodstains on Michael's shirt and called the police into her classroom. The police searched Michael's book bag and inside they found a bloody windbreaker and one latex glove. That led investigators to take him into custody for questioning. Once Michael entered the interrogation room, with very little prompting from the authorities, Michael waived his Miranda rights and began confessing to the detective. Police were not prepared for what they were about to hear. So I actually watched the interrogation footage, like I said.
Right.
And it's crazy. You can tell that Michael just wanted to like word vomit this all out. Like the detective, like I said, is a very good interrogator and like, you know, doesn't show any emotion and does all the right things to get him to keep talking. But it is right. interesting that Michael just like you could tell he just wants to tell the world about it.
Right.
So I saw the interrogation footage. There's an episode of it's a show called Signs of a Psychopath. Okay. It's on Amazon Prime. So if you guys have it, I highly recommend the show. It's pretty cool. Each episode is a different case. They cover a different case. This one, I believe, is episode 3 in season 1. So like I said, the interrogation footage is wild. So I highly recommend you guys watch it. The detective asks Michael, quote, "What were your intentions yesterday?" So this conversation is taking place on February 3rd, but the day prior was February 2nd, which just so happens to be Michael's birthday.
Wow.
So the day before the murder was Michael's birthday.
Okay.
So he had literally just turned 14 the day prior. So basically, the detective is asking him what his intentions were on the day of his birthday. So this is the day prior to the murder.
Okay.
Michael responds, "My intentions yesterday were to kill Andre." Remember, the victim in the bathroom's name was Jamie Goff, not Andre.
Right.
So Andre is another one of Michael's best friends.
Oh boy.
So Michael confesses that the day before the murder, he had planned to kill another one of his friends whose name was Andre Martin. He tells the detective, quote, "My intentions yesterday were to kill Andre the same way I killed Jamie today, except for the fact that I was going to stab him in the back and stab him here." And then he points to the right side of his neck. And then he says, "And that would have been it."
Okay.
Michael then goes on to explain how he had planned to kill Andre, saying, quote, "I was going to strangle him first. And then after he was dead, I was going to make sure by stabbing him."
Wow.
So remember, this kid's 14.
14, yeah. Jesus.
The detective says, quote, "Okay, and this was Andre?" And Michael confirms this was Andre.
Wow.
Michael goes on to tell the detective about his attempt on Andre's life the day prior, saying, quote, "Me, Andre, Jamie, and myself were in the bathroom." The detective asks, "How old is Andre?" And Michael replies, "He's 13. The detective asks, "What grade is Andre in?" And Michael says, "He's in the 8th grade. The detective then asks, "Is he a friend of yours?" And Michael replies, "Yes, he is."
Wow.
The detective then asks what specifically occurred the day before. Michael explains that he lured both Andre and Jamie into the bathroom before school began, intending to murder them both. The detective then asks, quote, "Now, did you lure him into the bathroom yesterday?" Michael matter-of-factly answers, quote, "Into the bathroom, yes, not the stall." Michael explains to the detective that he had planned to murder Andre first and then Jamie, and that he'd brought a 4-inch gravity knife with him in order to commit the murder. Michael says, quote, "I told them both that we were going to be late to class. And so we snuck upstairs after the late bell had rung. We got to the bathroom and I was trying to convince Andre to go into the stall." The detective asks, quote, "And what? How are you going to do that?" Michael answers, quote, "I was. I told him that I had something to show him." His response, he didn't want to do it. So he said, no. He's like, "Why can't Jamie go first?" My response was that he's going to go next.
Wow. He was going to do them at the same time.
And it's so crazy if you watch the footage, because he says all of this, like I'm talking like so flatly and like as if he was talking about baking bread.
Wow. That's yeah. Well, it's definitely signs of a psychopath.
Well, yeah. And it gets worse.
Oh, boy.
At that point, the detective says, okay, now did Jamie agree? Did Jamie say, "I'll come in, I'll look"? Michael says, yes, he did. The detective then asks, well, what did you say at that point? And Michael replies, "I said, no, he's going to go first." So he's basically saying that Jamie offered to go in first, but Michael was like, no, Andre's going to go first.
So, right. Okay. So the plan, he had it planned and he didn't want to deviate from it.
Right.
Okay.
The detective says, okay, any particular reason why? And Michael answers, I wanted to get Andre killed first. However, at that point, the school bell rang. And both Andre and Jamie wanted to go to class so that they didn't get into trouble. Because remember, they were already late to their first period.
Right.
The detective asks what happened after the bell rang. Michael says, quote, I said, it's okay. Are you guys going to cooperate tomorrow? They're like, yeah, okay, we'll cooperate tomorrow. Michael then told his friends to meet him in the same bathroom again the next day after school. And they both agreed. The detective says, all right. And you went off to class? And Michael replies, yes. However, lucky for Andre, He completely forgot about the meeting the next day. And instead of going to the bathroom like he promised, he attended a business club meeting at school.
Wow.
The detective then gets into the events of that day, the day that they're speaking, and asks Michael, quote, "What were your intentions today?" Asking what he would have done if Andre had actually shown up. Michael answers, quote, "I would have talked him into coming into the bathroom with me, coming into the stall. Then I would have proceeded to slit his throat and stab him continuously until he died in the neck area. And then I would have left him there and gone back downstairs and talked Jamie into coming upstairs, lured him into the other bathroom and slit his throat and stabbed him in the neck."
This kid's got some issues.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we'll see how like bad they are. Like, this isn't even the tip of the iceberg.
Wow. Okay.
However, because Andre didn't show up in the bathroom as planned the next day, on February 3rd, he was forced to come up with a new plan. Michael explains to the detective that he decided he was just going to kill Jamie alone instead. The detective asks Michael, "Today, who did you meet at the fence?" And Michael replies, "I met Jamie Goff." Upon meeting Jamie outside of the school, Michael explains that he tried to convince Jamie to go into the bathroom with him. The detective asks, "Why did you make a suggestion to Jamie to go inside the school today?" Michael replies, "I was planning to murder him." The detective asks, "How long had you had this plan?" And Michael says, "A little over a week." Michael then explains to the detective how he lured Jamie into the bathroom stall. So at this point, you can tell he starts to get like more excited if you're watching the actual footage.
Describing the crime.
Right. So it's crazy because he's very flat, like I said, the whole time. And then as he starts to really describe like his crime, he like gets a little more animated and he starts talking really, really fast. And you could tell he's almost like bragging to the detective, like trying to impress him. And he actually starts speaking so fast that the stenographer who's in there like recording everything, she actually has to interrupt him halfway through and ask him to slow down.
Probably know her too.
I don't know her name either. You can't even see her in the footage because she's like out of the camera range, but you just hear her be like, hey.
Right.
So Michael says, quote, "I was going to get him into the stall, the last stall, because it's the biggest, so I'd have more room. I got him into the stall by saying, 'Look, man, I have something to show you.' So I got him into the stall and I told him to turn around because I wanted it to be a surprise. Before that, I put on the gloves. He saw me put on the gloves and I said," at this point is when the stenographer kind of interrupts him and asks him to slow down. So they kind of pause for a moment so she can catch up typing. Then the detective continues and asks, "Now what transpired next?" And Michael says, "Okay, I was talking to him and I told him, 'All right, now I have to put my hand over your mouth.'" The detective responds, "Okay, once you did that, what happened next?" Michael explains, "I took the knife out and I proceeded to slit his throat." The detective asks, "Did Jamie say or do anything? Did he put up a struggle?" Michael replies, "Yes, he did. He turned around after I did that and he asked me not to kill him. So I told him, 'Okay, I'm not going to if you cooperate,' which was a lie. And so I realized that the stall door was open, so I locked it. And then I turned around again and proceeded to stab him." The detective then asks, "And where did you stab him, Mike?" And Michael says, "I'm not positively sure, but I'm guessing around the jugular vein. Right around here is what I was aiming for." From there, Michael admitted to stabbing Jamie a few more times in the face and head just to make sure that he was dead. And then he positioned his body on the toilet. The detective asks, "Now, after you did that, what happened?" Michael admits, "I left. I took my gloves off and I flushed them down the toilet." The detective then said, "All right, now you said you had gone out and you washed your hands." Michael says, "Yes. I put the knife was broken because of the stab wounds." So basically he had stabbed Jamie so viciously that the knife broke.
Oh, wow.
So he says the knife was broken because of the stab wounds and I couldn't close it back all the way. So I closed it as much as I could and I put it in my jacket pocket. I proceeded to go to the sink and wiped off the blood off the jacket. And then I took the jacket off. At this point, Michael begins to get excited again and he's starting to speak faster again. And once again, the transcriptionist has to interrupt him to tell him to slow down.
Golly.
Then the detective finally asks, "And is there any specific reason why you planned this?" And Michael replies, "No, there's not." The detective then asks, "Why did you choose Jamie, your friend?" Michael answers, he was the easiest out of anybody because he would have followed me because we're such good friends. And I knew he would have followed me in there and done what I would have said."
Wow. That's barbaric. Like, that's brutal.
Yeah.
That's
this crazy. This was his best friend.
Wow. Unreal.
That's... And they'd been friends for years. It wasn't like they just like became friends in the eighth grade. They'd been friends like all through school.
That's unbelievable. I mean, horrific.
So the detective then says, let me ask you this. Is there any particular reason why you did this to Jamie? Michael once again confirms, no, there's not. I think the detective couldn't believe that there was no reasoning behind it because he keeps asking him like in different ways, like almost like, dude, there has to be a reason.
Yeah, like did he piss you off? Did he make fun of you? Did he, you know?
Yeah. So he asks this, you'll see, he asks this like a variety of different ways, but every time Michael's just like, no, he was great. No.
Just so no reason. He just wanted to kill his best friend.
Yeah. Oh. The detective then asks, did he offend you in some way? And Michael confirms again, no, he did not. Finally, the detective asks, do you think what you did is right or wrong? And Michael replies, no, I don't, which clearly doesn't even answer the question.
Right.
Like, I don't know if he just didn't get the question, but what?
Okay.
So then the detective reiterates, well, what don't you think? Then Michael says, I think it is neither right, but I don't think it was wrong. The detective then asks, do you know what you did is wrong? And Michael responds, yes, I do. So basically, I think he's saying like, I don't think it was morally wrong, but I understand that it's legally wrong.
14 years old, right?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a messed up mind right there. That thing is...
Well, and what's crazy is there's never like, because I thought when I first saw this case, I'm like, wow, he must have had like a fucked up childhood.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, he must have been abused as a kid. Like no, from what everybody has to say, including Michael all accounts, himself.
He was fine.
Yeah. His parents were like great parents.
Unreal.
So he was basically born without like with a screw loose.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess there's some type of, I don't want to say mental illness, but there's definitely some type of disconnect in his brain that makes him.
Well, you know, we'll get into like what people think is wrong, like with him mentally.
Okay.
So the detective at that point says, are you sorry this happened today? And Michael states, no, I'm not. Throughout the entire interrogation, Michael is pretty flat and emotionless. Following his interrogation, police searched Michael's home. And they found a private journal in his room, which contained some pretty disturbing stuff. Oh, inside, boy. Police found a printout describing the different types of serial killers. And at the bottom, Michael had written, quote, will become a serial killer.
Oh, my Lord.
So supposedly this kid was gifted, but he doesn't seem too bright to me. I get it. You're 14 and 14 year olds are pretty stupid in general. Like they don't have a full understanding of life. But if you really want to be like this badass serial killer, maybe you shouldn't like keep a printout in your room describing serial killers and then right at the bottom like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be one.
He was a gifted child.
Yeah, supposedly he was like, he was in the gifted program at his high school or at the middle school. Yeah, and by all accounts like he was like a normal kid, got good grades, everything.
Unreal.
So the journal also contained morbid drawings of how he'd like to murder people. So one drawing that they show in particular is of a person tied to a table with a circular saw about to cut them in half.
Oh gosh.
However, most damning, the journal contained detailed plans of how Michael had planned to kill Andre and Jamie. The plans even contained step-by-step instructions on how he would do it. Like I said, not the sharpest crayon in the box.
No, yeah, that's premeditation right there.
Well, and lots of proof that you don't really need to have.
Well, right, yeah. That's a lot of evidence against you.
The journal also contained detailed plans on how he wanted to kill his sister.
Older or younger, do we know?
I'm not sure. They never really specify.
Okay.
Also, during Michael's interrogation, Andre, because remember, Andre was supposed to be in that bathroom.
Right.
So Andre heard the news, obviously, of his friend's murder and immediately suspected that it was Michael. So he, while they're literally interrogating Michael, Andre calls the police department with his parents to tell them about his experience in the bathroom with Michael and Jamie the previous day.
Right.
So everything's coming together pretty quickly.
Right.
Michael was arrested, obviously, after his confession and charged with attempted murder for the attempt on Andre's life. And first degree murder for Jamie's murder.
Okay.
After Michael's arrest, his attorneys claimed he was mentally ill and they believed he suffered from schizophrenia. So as a result, they didn't believe that Michael was competent enough to stand trial. A competency hearing was scheduled for November of 2004. Actually, the court case like moves pretty fast because remember the murder happened in February and they're already having their first hearing in November.
Okay.
So court appointed experts testified. Dr. Vanessa Archer, who is a psychologist, and a Dr. John Shaw, who is a psychiatrist. Both experts testified that Michael did not suffer from schizophrenia or any other major mental illness that would affect his ability to stand trial.
Wow. Okay.
However, the defense called their own expert witness, Dr. Barry Rosenfeld. He's a psychologist who testified that Hernandez had symptoms that were consistent with paranoid schizophrenia, and as a result, he was not competent to stand trial. After hearing all the testimony, the judge decided that Michael was indeed competent enough to stand trial. However, only a month later, in September of 2004, Michael's defense team again called for a review of Michael's competency. The court appointed a new expert psychologist to evaluate him, Dr. Ralph Richardson, and then Dr. Archer, who was the court-appointed psychiatrist from the last hearing, he also reevaluated him.
Okay.
At the hearing, the judge was also able to view and consider Dr. Rosenfeld's prior testimony from the previous competency hearing. So the judge basically was hearing from three separate psychologists or psychiatrists.
Okay.
This time, Dr. Richardson, the new psychologist, testified that Michael did suffer from mental illness and he had obsessive compulsive disorder. However, despite this, Dr. Richardson still believed Michael was competent enough to stand trial. Dr. Archer did change her assessment of Michael within the second hearing. She claimed she now believed Michael suffered from a very severe version of obsessive compulsive disorder. She also believed he suffered from chronic depression and dysthymic disorder. Do you know what that is?
Never heard of it.
So neither had I. I had to Google it.
Okay.
It's defined as a low mood occurring for at least 2 years, along with at least two other symptoms of depression. So basically, it's like a very severe form of depression.
Okay.
However, regardless of his new diagnosis, both experts still agreed Michael was competent enough to stand trial. Therefore, the judge deemed Michael competent and the trial moved forward. Okay. The trial didn't begin until 4 years following the murder, so in 2008. Because of the publicity surrounding the case, the trial was moved from Miami to Orange County, Florida. So basically somewhere around Orlando.
In Orlando, yeah.
At trial, Michael's defense was that he was insane at the time of the crime. His defense moved to have the attempted murder charge dropped, arguing that although Michael planned to do it, he hadn't actually acted upon the plan overtly. The defense's motion was denied.
Of course.
During the trial, Andre Martin was called to testify. So he was 18 by this time. Because remember, it's been 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years, yeah.
On the stand, Andre stated that Michael had been obsessed with slasher films since the sixth grade, and he had idolized the serial killers in films like Halloween and Friday the 13th. He said, quote, "He said it would be cool to be a serial killer one day." Andre also testified that Michael had begun to act strangely by eighth grade. He stated that he started to become obsessed with exercise and withdrew socially. He also testified that Michael had told he and Jamie that he believed he was mentally ill. He said, quote, "Michael diagnosed himself as schizophrenic and having obsessive compulsive disorder. He just told us he believed he had those two mental illnesses," which I find interesting because now he's using that as his defense. Like, it almost seems like he was trying to plant that seed prior. Michael's defense attorney, Richard Rosenbaum, asked Andre on the stand if he believed Michael was mentally ill. And Andre answered, quote, "Insane? No. But in my opinion, prior to the incident, he wasn't mentally stable, but not insane."
Wow. That's a big statement.
Yeah.
You know, that he's like, he's saying that there's an issue, but not quite, you know, like, not quite off the rocker, you know?
Well, I agree with, like, having read all the case and watched the, you know, interrogations and stuff. I think that I agree with what Andre's saying. Like, I think he definitely wasn't mentally stable, but
right. Yeah, there's definitely something going on.
Right. But do I think that he was not in control of his actions? Like, no.
Right. He knew exactly what was happening, what he was going to do.
Yeah. Like, I don't think he was schizophrenic to the point, like, you know how some people who legitimately are schizophrenic, they are so mentally ill that they legitimately, like, can't differentiate reality.
Yeah, they're totally in a whole different world.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it was that.
Right. Agreed.
Ultimately, the jury rejected Michael's claims that he had been insane at the time of the murder and found him guilty of both the attempted murder and murder in the first degree. The judge sentenced Michael to life with an additional 30 years for the attempted murder of Andre, but that 30-year sentence was to be served concurrently.
Oh, okay. Well.
In his victim impact statement, Jamie's father, George Goff, which they show this and it's like heartbreaking. In the courtroom, he says to Michael, quote, "You took his life. Why, Michael? Why? He was your friend, Michael. He was your friend." So following his conviction, Michael attempted to appeal his sentence on the grounds that he had been a minor at the time of the crime. However, he was unsuccessful. But 12 years after the crime, in 2015, Michael was granted a new sentencing trial because a year prior, the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled that mandatory life sentences could not be imposed on juveniles. So basically, he was still guilty of the crime, but he was basically a new just sentencing trial.
Okay. I guess off new guidelines or off new recommendations from the Supreme Court.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. So the trial took place on February 4th, 2016, which is crazy because that's exactly 12 years and one day after the murder.
Yeah. And his birthday too, right?
Yeah. Because his birthday is February 2nd. So
So a couple days after.
But the murder took place on February 3rd.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting just how that like worked out.
Right.
So at this trial, Michael claimed he had turned his life around working as a law clerk in prison. And he was very remorseful for his actions now that he was healthier mentally. At the trial, Michael tearfully told Jamie's parents, quote, "I had to learn over the years how wrong it was, what I did, and how much pain I caused you. And I'm sorry." However, when the prosecutor got the chance to cross-examine Michael, she shocked the courtroom. So this prosecutor is a badass. I don't know what her name is because I don't think they ever say it. I want you to figure out who she is because when you hear this, I was like, oh my God, this is the coolest prosecutor in the whole world.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try to research this case. I probably know all these people.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you know her. She's like a badass. So she gets up to cross-examine Michael. And she starts playing recordings of Michael's phone conversations in prison with his girlfriend.
They're all recorded.
Which, who are these girls who want to date and marry like known murderers? It's
like a fad or it's like a groupie thing or I don't know. It's
fucking weird.
It happens, yeah.
Well, this girl's also a piece of shit, which you'll see from these recordings. So.
Oh, great. Okay.
So this is the recording she played. So this is Michael talking. He goes, "So I think I told you last time that because, you know, I'm supposed to be going up for my resentencing in August. It just seems like such a needless formality that put me through another psychological interview. I've been interviewed by so many psychologists, psychiatrists over the years. It's ridiculous. And, you know, what more do you want from me? My judge, who happens to be a former prosecutor, is totally on the state's side. It's really bad. He's a piece of shit." So mind you, she's playing this and the judge is like sitting right there.
Yeah. I would have loved to have seen what his facial expression was.
Watch the episode because you can see it. And he looks over. Sure. He looks over like, mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. No, not the judge, the Michael.
Oh, you can tell. He doesn't react. Even like in his confession videos, he's the type where he doesn't have a lot of like facial reaction.
Okay.
But you can tell that he like has an oh shit moment.
Right.
So his girlfriend laughs and responds, "For sure. Why don't you spend your weekend practicing learning how to cry?"
No.
Michael laughs and says, "Ha ha, oh my God, I may have to just stab myself." The girlfriend laughs and says, "Ha, oh my God." Then Michael replies, quote, "I better bring a sharp object to the interview. Do you have something in your hand, Mr. Hernandez?" "No, stab, stab. See, I can cry."
This guy is batshit crazy.
Yeah. The girlfriend laughs annoyingly again and says, "I'm human, I swear. Look at these tears." Michael replies, "When I have life-threatening wounds, I can cry." In another recording, Michael said, "But then I was reading that Ed Gein actually inspired the main character for the movie Psycho. And he inspired the Buffalo Bill character out of Silence of the Lambs. That was crazy. It was funny because he used to dig up bodies and he was making a skin suit. That was crazy shit." In another recording, Michael shares pieces of his childhood journal with his friend. So remember, the police, you know, that's part of evidence is his childhood journal.
Right.
So he has copies of it. So he's been mailing these copies to the girlfriend, like bragging about it. So on the phone, she says, "One thing I love about your letters, you can tell when you get really excited about something because your handwriting goes down the drain. The other one I found in there, that was the one I was curious about. It said, quote, 'Take right eye.' Is that literal or figurative?" Michael replies, "Oh, no. That's when I was actually going to start becoming a serial killer. That was going to be my signature." Then the girlfriend goes, "Oh, okay." And he replies, "I was going to take their right eye and carve a cross into their forehead." Then the girlfriend says, "Oh, nice." And he says, "What?" Yeah, she's fucking nuts too.
Wow. She needs to be evaluated herself.
Yeah. Then he says, "You want to get credit for your stuff. The worst thing that would happen is like, imagine you're a serial killer and you're killing all these people and someone else gets all the credit. How crappy would that be?"
What the fuck?
This guy's like
Who thinks like that? Like,
he's a psychopath for sure.
Yeah, that's Wow.
So once the recording stops, the prosecutor goes, "You got a paperclip in there?" Michael responds, "No, ma'am." She goes,
"Stab, stab, stab."
Yeah. Then she goes, "You got a knife?" Michael says, "No, ma'am." Then she asks, "How'd you muster up those tears?" Because remember, he had just been crying, saying how sorry he was. Michael replies, "I feel horrible about what I did. And it hurts me how senseless it was, because he was always such a good friend to me." The prosecutor asks, "Do you even have tears coming down your face?" And Michael says, "Yes, I have tears coming down my face." Then the prosecutor says, "Because I haven't seen you wipe your nose or wipe an eye, the remorse you show because you think, quote, the judge is a piece of shit, right?" So at this point, the judge looks over at Michael like, "Hmm?" And Michael goes,
"What do you
no,
got
ma'am.
To say now?"
Yeah, like, "What you gonna say now, motherfucker?" And Michael goes, "No, ma'am, I don't think that." She then says, "But you said that, though, right?" And Michael answers, "I did say it, and it was a horrible, stupid thing to say." The prosecutor says, "What was stupid was you didn't think that I was smart enough to listen to your phone calls." I was like, mic drop!
That was good.
Like, she's like the best. I was like, oh my God, she's got him.
I'm sure I know who she is.
You have to figure it out and come. I just want to be, I know she's never going to listen to this, but I just want to be like, she's a badass.
Yeah.
Following all of this, the judge made his ruling and he stated, quote, "I'm compelled to reach a conclusion that I never wanted to reach. And that conclusion is that the defendant, Michael Hernandez, today is essentially the same kind of person he was in 2004. Accordingly, the court adjudicates the defendant guilty of the first degree murder of Jamie Goff and sentences him to life in prison.
Good for her or him. Okay. Was judge a male or a female?
It was a male. Actually, a good looking guy.
You don't know his name, do you?
No, I don't. But I think it's interesting because, you know, usually judges are like really, really old. Like he was like a good, like he was still an older gentleman, but he was a good looking guy. Like I was like, man, that's a hot judge.
Okay.
Just saying, you know, if I was single and ready to mingle, I might be like, introduce me.
Okay.
Don't worry, Logan.
You're not single and there's no mingle.
I'm not single and I'm not ready to mingle. Okay. However, on April 29th, 2021, Michael Hernandez actually died in prison at the age of...
I didn't hear about that.
At the age of 31. So this was not that long ago. Only it was in April of this year.
Right.
So he died from cardiac dysrhythmia attributed to morbid obesity.
Really? He got big in there?
Yeah, he got like pretty big, which is interesting because, I mean, obviously he was only 14 when it happened, but he was like a smaller kid then. But yeah, I guess he like gained a lot of weight in prison and he got like so big that he had a heart attack and died.
You wouldn't think that they would have the ability to, I don't think they feed him that much. Like
maybe he, I don't know. He's crazy. He probably stealing food from other people.
Well, they do get access to like the commissary or whatever. So I think they, depending on where he's at and what his status was, I know they get to buy like, you know, it's called commissary. They get to buy food and snacks and drinks and stuff like that. So,
well, and apparently, because remember how he had wanted to kill his sister too. Apparently, right. His parents like were still like believed he was mentally ill and like not responsible for his actions. And when he died, the sister actually went to the prison to identify the body. So I guess the sister was like, forgave him for wanting to kill her.
Or she thought, well, he's dead. He can't hurt me. So
I mean, true.
You know, I mean, who knows like what exactly the relationship was at that point. But
well, in good news, remember Andre Martin, the friend that survived?
Yeah. Yep.
He is reportedly doing well, and he actually is now a Miami-Dade police detective himself.
Oh, wait. Did they show him?
Yeah.
Is he a black male?
Yeah. They never showed him, like, grown. I only saw, like, his, you know, like, child picture when he was, like, 14. But, yeah, he's a black male. But, yeah, supposedly he's a detective now. Do you know him?
I do.
That's him.
Now that you say that, when I was teaching at the academy is when I first met him.
Were you one of his teachers?
I was.
Oh my gosh, how crazy. Yeah. Wow. Well,
see, he doesn't talk about like he never brought that up, which naturally.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's traumatic. Well, I even read one of the papers, I want to say it's Miami Herald, but don't quote me on that. I think they interviewed him after it came out that Michael died. And he basically said like he kind of had a badass quote. Like, I wish I would have written it down now, but he basically was like, it's great that people like have forgiven him and stuff, but like I haven't. So he basically like he can go fuck himself.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. When
he said it's easy, I think what he said was it's easy to be apologetic like once you're in prison.
Yeah, once you're caught, you're sorry. Like we say that at work all the time. Like, you know, they say, oh, he's never been arrested before. Like when we arrest somebody, it's like, well, a lot of times they just haven't been caught yet. You know, like it's not that they're an angel. And then they made a mistake one time. I mean, that does happen too. But you know, these people that are, for me, it's hard to fathom forgiving somebody or giving forgiveness to somebody who commits such a heinous act.
Well, and who clearly has no remorse. Like,
right.
I'm sorry, but once those, it was very clear he had no remorse just during the confession.
Right.
But even years later, when all these phone calls come out, like, clearly you don't give a shit.
Right. For sure. Yeah. The way he was talking to the girlfriend or, you know, those recorded calls and stuff. But to me, it's like, for me, I don't think I would ever forgive somebody who gave me that type of pain or did that to my family. I would have to find a way to accept it for myself, for my own mental health, like somehow to work through that part of it. But as far as forgiving, you know, I don't think they deserve forgiveness. I think they commit a crime like that, they take a life, I think they should forfeit their life. Like, that's my belief. That's how I feel. It's not necessarily the way it should be, but I feel like if, you know, you take somebody's life, you should forfeit yours, because that person no longer has a chance. No matter what the, you know, the circumstance or the scenario is, you know, you took that person's life and they have no longer have a chance to live it the way they want to, or, you know, share it with their family or whatever. So,
because Jamie Goff's parents, they came out and said that they like forgive Michael, even though they know he's not sorry.
I mean, I guess if I was in that, I guess I really can't speak honestly of it because I've never been in that position. And I guess if somebody is mentally ill or has some type of mental deficiency or something, like, I guess maybe, but I just don't see, like, you know, to me, it doesn't matter what your status is. You knowingly took a life.
Well, and especially like Andre, not only did he have to get over the fact that could have been him, which is like traumatic, especially at the age of 14.
Absolutely.
But also the fact that his best friend like died like horribly, you know what right. I mean? Especially at that age, that's like hard to get through.
And I don't know how close he was to Michael, who committed the act.
No, they were best friends.
Okay, so he lost essentially two friends and learned that one of his best friends intended to kill him. Like, I don't know. That just, I'm glad that Andre said, you know, that quote, whatever, like he doesn't forgive him or whatever. Like, I believe I would be the same way. I don't think I have it in me to, you know, to be that compassionate to somebody who caused me that type of pain and grief. And, you know, it's not fair. It's not right. So I don't think they should be given any benefit.
Well, on a happier note, we have a question this week from Tina. She wants to know how many kids we have, like how many I have and then how many you have.
All right, so I'll start because I guess I'm the oldest.
Yeah, oldest.
I have three children. I have you, and then I have my second daughter, and then I have a son. I adopted you.
Yes.
So people know, but I've been raising you since you were four.
Yes.
Essentially. Yeah, I have three, and then you gave me.
Yeah, I have four altogether. I have two stepdaughters, and then I have two with my husband. So we have three girls, and then our last one's a boy. So our oldest is 13, and then 11, and then four, and then our son is 1.5. So yeah, we've got a full house.
We do. The Martinez and Fitzgerald clan is getting big.
It's getting large.
Yeah. So
yeah. Thank you, Tina. So if you will follow us on social media, we are at Can't Make This Shit Up Pod on Instagram, and in our bio on Instagram, there's a link there which you can make case suggestions or ask us questions. So if you want to do that, we also always take questions and case suggestions by email. So you can email us at can'tmakethisshitupod@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook discussion group. So we're Can't Make This Shit Up, a true crime podcast discussion group on Facebook.
Yeah.
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 So until next week. Bye.
Bye.